Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a Soundlinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If there's an author you'd like to see on the show, email me at steve@cinelinks.com and I'll do my best to accommodate. Today in the show, we're talking with Mike Chen, author of the excellent new book, We Could Be Heroes, which is, and I quote, an extraordinary and emotional adventure about unlikely friends and the power of choosing who you want to be. Like his previous books, We Could Be Heroes is a tale about family and friendship and humor that just happens to have some time travel or an apocalypse, something he's becoming known for, his brand, if you will. We'll talk about not only that, but his love of hockey, his contribution to last year's Star Wars from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back, a bit of politics, of course, and many other things. This is a minor spoiler discussion, so if you haven't read the book yet and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've had a chance to read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This episode is being recorded during a time where fear, hate, uncertainty, and political strife has caused a bunch of MAGA folks, including the President of the United States, to incite and commit acts of violence on the nation's capital. I'm sure you've all seen it or heard about it. By the time this episode airs, who knows what the situation will be. Just know that I hope anyone listening is safe and not in harm's way. And while I highly doubt this is the case, but if you're listening to this show and one of those folks participating in an insurrection or support them in any way whatsoever, this is not a space for you and you are not welcome. These comments are my own, of course. I have no idea if they are my guests, but maybe we'll ask him. But anyways, now that that's done, we are here to talk about publishing and books. Pretty crappy week to debut a book, but one of the many things that got lost this first week of 2021 actually was a whole bunch of great new Star Wars books. And one of the things I wanted to talk to my guest about was Star Wars, because fittingly enough, he contributed to the Star Wars universe late last year. And he's also a massive lifelong fan, so who better to talk to about than Star Wars? But we're not here to talk about just Star Wars. In fact, we're here to talk about something even better, because he's got a brand new book that's coming out, and it's pretty darn good. Mike Chen has been writing most of his life, starting with fan fiction, and after doing a lot of different things, really beefing up that resume, he's finally come home, writing published fiction that blends science fictional elements and themes with grounded and intimate stories. I stole most of that from his website. He's written a few books now, including Here and Now and Then and A Beginning at the End, both of which received high praise. And like I said, he's got a brand new book out and it's pretty great. Please welcome back to the show, Mike Chen. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Talking during this week of hell.
But yes, we were talking a bit there before we got started. I think we both agreed that as bad as it's been, it's, you know, we gotta find little things to bring us joy, right?
Yeah, and actually, like, I saw, I had a big publicity hit today. Like I was on a book list for CNN, and I wasn't expecting that. And I'm like, I retweeted it, and I'm like, you know, hey, you know, it's cool to, you know, we have to find joy somewhere, but like, let's not lose focus. So, you know, like, make sure you call your representatives. And also, here's my list. You know, it's a really weird time to be doing this. And I've talked about this with my author friends. Cause I mean, like most of my friends who have debuted at or around the same time that I have, like, well, anyone since 2016, it never feels like the right time. It's just been like, there's always some emergency going on. And I think, I just saw one of my friends, she announced, she's a YA author, but she just announced her middle grade deal today, like this afternoon, and she had the same preface that I basically did, which is like, you know, hey, I hate to announce this thing right now, but it's going public, so here it is. And you know, I told her, like, we should relish this, because you know, finding joy while being aware of the chaos is very, very important.
Who was that?
Samira Ahmed.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, she just announced her middle grade debut.
Right on. And yeah, you know, to your point, everyone handles things differently for sure. You know, I don't always handle these things the best. And Lord knows, you know, there's some days where I bring it on myself. Like I was telling you, I've got every TV on with the news on and I've got, you know, walking around with my phone in my hand all goddamn day. But yeah, it's like you said, it's really important that we don't also lose sight of trying to, you know, I don't want to say, you know, if you don't, they win, the terrorists win, but it's kind of like that in a way, isn't it? A little bit, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, there's two things. It's, you can't be on all the time. Otherwise, right. Otherwise you're just going to lose focus and just kind of give up. So I think it's really important to like find whatever method to recharge. And it's really important to celebrate when good people have good things happen to them. And especially in the creative arts, because I think, you know, what you see with the bad people is a stark unappreciation of the creative arts, or they completely miss the goddamn point.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yep.
Like I saw this incredible thing today where Armin Shimerman, who plays Odo on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. was tweeting about the current events. And someone tried to say that, like, well, as a lifelong Trek fan, I disagree with you. And like everyone is like, how can you possibly be a Star Trek fan, of any of the series, and support what's happening right now? I mean,
if you knew anything about Gene Roddenberry, as far as what his vision was for Star Trek, for what a sybaritic future would look like. Then there's no way.
You know, the Vulcans' infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Yeah. I mean, like, right.
How do you say that and then be like, well, actually, we support these people who hate everyone. It's just,
It's like, you always hate it when you find out, you know, there are people in your fandom that are, you know, don't even agree with you, but this takes to a bit of a different level now.
Just because
it is so vile, and it's really now. I mean, if you didn't know it already, it's really dangerous, right?
Yeah, I tell people all the time that if you want to debate like the economic benefits of small government versus big government, because there's a legitimate discussion there. Like my dad is extreme small government person. He says big government is too wasteful and too slow. Mm-hmm. And there's a total point there.
Yep.
On the other hand, big government supports when you have a pandemic.
Right.
So there's a balance there. And like, I think that's a totally valid conversation to have, because there's going to be ebbs and flows based on technology and culture and all this
Absolutely.
Other stuff.
Absolutely. Yep.
But, you know, like, we don't like people of this demographic just because. That's bad.
Yeah, being a decent and caring person is, like, that's just an evergreen, right? Like, there should be no expiration on that. And it shouldn't matter left, right, center. It doesn't matter. It goes without saying, but it doesn't. Now, it doesn't seem like it does anyways. But one of the crazy things, too, amongst all of this, and it's really affects folks like you who have books coming out, we're still having this goddamn pandemic. And yesterday was like the worst day in US for deaths. It was almost 4,000, I think, just under 4,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so not only do you have the other stuff that we just talked about, but now this whole time you can't even promote your work in a traditional sense either.
Yeah.
So, because normally, especially with, Star Wars and stuff, but even with We Could Be Heroes and your past books, like, you'd be planning a little book tour or some a convention circuit or whatever, right? So you don't really get to, you're not marketing it the same way. How has that been for you? Just it's because it's been all Zoom calls and Zoom panels and all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah. So what was interesting was, so my release last year, a beginning at the end, is a post-pandemic book where a pandemic wipes out 80% of the population. And it's about how survivors, you know, once the pandemic has settled, how do they rebuild community? So it's really, it's a rebuilding book. It's not like, you know, The Walking Dead or The Road or anything like that.
Right.
And so when I was starting the publicity for it in December of 2019, and then there were like the whispers of like, hey, there's this thing, you know, and it's kind of scary. And like, I started doing book events. I think I did book events all the way to mid-February.
Right.
And so I remember the last one I did was at a bookstore about 2 hours north of me. And I started by thanking people for coming to listen to someone talk about a fake pandemic during a real pandemic. And, you know, I, at the time, like, you know, we had no idea what it was going to be like this, but, yeah, and then everything shut down. Like, I was going to go to Arizona and LA and a few other places for book conferences and other events. And, like, one by one, they just got wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, there is definitely the book industry it is very dinosaurish. And so now they have been forced to adapt to having like a virtual environment.
Yeah.
And so my publicist said that, like, you know, when things get settled down, we have bookstore events again and conferences again, there's still going to be this virtual component to it, because now we have
for sure there will.
This infrastructure there. And I think that's great, because you can reach so many more people so much easier. But I was actually talking with a friend yesterday. We were just checking in, and because the last time I hung out with her was at Denver Pop Culture Con. This is KB Wagers, who writes badass space opera. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I'm having a rough time right now. I'm like, yeah, you know, one thing that actually keeps me going is being able to go to a con, thinking about going to a con and seeing my friends, you know, because we see each other like once or twice a year. And there's like, you know, a group of us that, you know, hit the con circuit. And that's keeping me going. Like, you know, I want to see my, you know, local friends, and I want to be able to take my daughter to like Disneyland and stuff, but just like from purely selfish purposes, like as someone with, you know, a family, it's so nice to just go to a con and just think about myself and hang out with my author friends, you know, cause there's no responsibilities there other than like, you know, going to go talk about your books for an hour, which is great.
Right.
So I really miss that. And I'm really looking forward to that. So I'm looking forward to it being the best of both worlds coming out of this. And I think there's some really good things that are going to come out of it, but, we've got to survive like the next 6 months or so.
Right. We got a long way to go yet. But one of the things I've said to other authors during this is, if there is a silver lining, it's, I think that people, it has been this sort of embrace of technology and and just exactly what you said, the reach is like, is, you know, 100-fold, 1,000-fold now, you know, before you'd be at a panel in front of a few hundred people, maybe 1,000 if the room was big, but you do these panels and there's, you know, you can get thousands of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did from a certain point of view, like there was, you know, groups of us that like we just went around, and I think there was several sponsored book events, and they were all sponsored by the same bookstore, but it was like all these authors who, you know, are all completely different locations were able to all get together. There's like basically zero overhead. And chat about it. And one of, like, I've done several because I'm a big music nerd, and I've done like several record release Zooms where like where you just RSVP, you purchase the album in advance, and suddenly you're in a room of like 50 to 100 or 200 super fans, you know, and you're having like an intimate back and forth with the artist, and that's awesome, you know, and that could not exist elsewhere. So I really hope that just in all forms that like this extends. Also, I like working from home instead of having to commute every day.
Yeah, no doubt. I've learned I'm not really great in a pandemic. I mean, just not only just mentally, but my three favorite things were going to the movies, going to concerts, and conventions. So it's like, it's, you know, XXX. And, you know, and just the thought of standing at a full concert hall or convention right now, really, it's frightening. Yeah. It scares the shit out of me. And I think we're so far away from it. I've just sort of put it out of my mind a bit, actually. Like, I don't even, it's been so long at this point, and it feels like it's so far out. It just feels like, it's not a real thing anymore.
I'm drafting. So not We Could Be Heroes, obviously, not the book after that, but the book after that. So it's scheduled for early 2023. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is about music. Mm. And originally I don't think we're 100% decided on this yet, but like I told my editor, like I'd like it to take place in like before COVID, because it's a vampire who plays punk rock. Mm-hmm. And she goes to shows. That's how she uses her immortality. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot in there about concerts. And I'm like, I don't know if I can even go there, you know, thinking about it post COVID. And she's like, well, it's far enough away that like we could always pivot. But she thinks that, you know, it would probably like a story about immortality and the arts would probably be pretty relevant, you know, in 2023. So like, let's see how, you know, society plays out and kind of like keep both paths in mind. But I think for now, like we're actually going to, it's going to take place in like present day or near future where that stuff has settled. But it's like, you know, in 2022, I may have to completely rewrite portions of it because it's just not there yet.
Right. That sounds really cool. I'm going to make sure I keep an eye out for that. Have you seen the movie Only Lovers Left Alive?
I have not. You know, since my daughter has been born,
it's a few years old now. I think it might be at least 4 or 5 years old. Anyways, Jim Jarmusch directed it, and check it out. It's about vampires, and one of them is a rock musician, and loves music, and has like this incredible like guitar collection, and it's a fantastic film, and I absolutely recommend it. And it just sounds like, not that you need inspiration, but I bet there's a couple cool things in there you could be like, oh, right on, that's pretty cool. Just, I know it sounds like what you're writing, not to steal from it, but that you would appreciate it is what I'm saying.
Maybe after I'm done drafting, I'll check it out.
You know what? Legally, probably pretty smart.
It's like, why we're not allowed to read fan fiction of any kind.
No, I know that. Yeah. But like, again, it's a really, really, really cool movie. So just to put a pin in that too. Yeah. With me, I'm a huge music fan too. Big record collection. I used to be a roadie for bands when I was young. I've had to like buy into a couple of just sort of like live streaming things and just to get that fix. And I can't wait one day to feel comfortable and safe and be able to go to live music again. That's a big, big part of my life. So fingers crossed.
Even with like, you know, like the first few times you go, even if everyone's like 100% vaccinated, I think everyone is going to just feel weird.
It's going to feel weird. Like
you're not going to be,
someone's going to rub up against you and you're like, go to death.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm there with you. I miss live music so much.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. So, well, like I said, I think it's one day. I mean, it has to come. I mean, just the thought of, it seems absurd to say, but you can't just picture the live music industry just never coming back. It just doesn't seem, it sounds ridiculous to say that, but right now you're like, geez, I don't know. But anyways, we'll see. Let's get those vaccinations going though. We got to get those things going out a little lot quicker. But
yes.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because it was a big part of your professional writing career. Well, I guess it was kind of professionally writing, but what's the deal with you and hockey? That's a Canadian. I'm always fascinated when other people like hockey.
I've been, even though I grew up in the Bay Area, I actually started watching the NHL like about 2 years before the Sharks came into existence.
Okay.
And it was because it was just on Sports Channel. And I think it was like, you know, I have like this kind of punk rock mentality where I want to be different. You know, it's like all of my things like kind of veered that way. So all my friends like basketball, it's like, this is hockey. This is amazing. Look at how fast they're going. So
I said I was a roadie for bands when I was younger. It was for punk bands. And one band that I worked a lot with was from Santa Cruz, California. And the singer, biggest hockey fan I know. Born and raised in Santa Cruz, California. He's the biggest hockey fan. He knows like the rosters from like Canadian junior teams. Like it's crazy. And I know a lot of punk rockers are hockey fans. I don't know. Yeah. You're right. It must be something with the sport?
Left of center. Yeah. I think I remember like John Buchagrass on ESPN, because he's a big music guy and he always makes music references. But he had a column once talking about how hockey is punk rock. And that's kind of like, it's awesome, but it also hinders its growth because we can be gatekeepers.
Sure.
You know, just right. Like how punk fans can be.
But then, and when it gets too popular, you're not going to like it anymore.
Yeah. So my relationship with hockey started, like I was probably like 10 or something like that. And then I always felt like I was a pretty good writer. And then like when sports media was just hitting the internet, and I was always seeking coverage online, because like in Northern California at the time, like it just wasn't even existent other than like Green News. And so I found a couple of like very early sports websites, and they just had like a write for us link, and I auditioned for them. And like, and I've always been very analytical when I watch sports. So like all of the fancy stats, as we called it when I was a writer, like all of that was always really intriguing. Like the numbers, like the why behind everything, rather than just like the good old hockey network of like, you know, he just works hard and, you know, he's got good instinct. And it's like, well, why? So I'm like, I'm interested in systems and numbers and stats and things like that. So I just started writing that. And then I had my own blog for a few years, and it was like the early, like early mid 2000s. And at that time, like the group was really tight, like the group of hockey bloggers, we were pretty tight. The ones that put out consistent content, like we're always linking to each other, and gradually each of us got absorbed into something bigger. And now it's interesting seeing how, like, you know, 15 years later, like Greg Wyshynski's at ESPN and James Myrtle is like editor at The Athletic and Lyle Richardson's right for like the Hockey News and other places. And, you know, like I left it, but I'm still in touch with all of them. So it's like all of us who like were kind of like put into that circle like really early on, like all just kind of just kept at it in different ways.
I really don't want to turn this into a hockey discussion because
I
brought it up, so it's my fault. But one last thing, what do you think of this format coming up? Like there's a Canadian division and
you know, it's like one of my friends texted me with the news about like the sponsored division titles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't care, you know, whatever they can do to prop the cap up, because sure, you know, it's like with anything right now, like however you can generate revenue, go do it, man. Yeah, it's totally fine.
I read that Ottawa and Toronto just got permission to play in their home building. So we'll see how that goes. But
yeah, I mean, like here in California, like the Sharks are doing training camp in Arizona because like have no contact sports allowed right here because we had a lid on it and then everyone got fucking selfish. And
so are they not playing in California because the season starts, I think, doesn't it start in a week or so?
No, so they they're doing training camp in Arizona. Mm-hmm. There's no press allowed at the training camp, so it's like, you know, all of the press is actually still in California and they're like they're just doing Zoom calls with the team,
right?
They start with I think a 2-week road trip, and so that would take them to like early February. Mm. And they're hoping that by then they'll actually be able to play here. But if not, they have contingencies that they haven't announced yet.
Okay.
So whenever this goes live, things might be a little bit different. But yeah, so okay. You know, I'm just happy to have it back. I hope everyone is safe. Yeah. I mean, like, I was amazed that they pulled off the playoff bubble. Like, I thought that was going to be a disaster, but it was a fucking joy to just have hockey on like 5 games a day while I was working. So
well, I didn't hear anything bad come from the juniors. So I assume, you know, if it's the more times they have a successful sort of run here, I think that'll give people a little more confidence. Right. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, that's, I was reading, you know, your bio a little bit there and there's a lot of hockey in it. So I was just like, well, I got to ask him about hockey then. And also, too, I do want to sort of wrap up from a certain point of view. And for anyone that doesn't know, Mike contributed one of the 40 short stories to end of last year's From a Certain Point of View, the Empire Strikes Back edition. You had that really great short story about the Emperor. And I just want to know sort of, you know, you're a huge, huge lifelong Star Wars fan. And I know I talked to you at the time and it was a dream come true for you. And just sort of tell me, you know, like, how was the experience for you looking back on it? Because now it's been a couple of months, you're able to look back, and how was that for you? And I know the answer probably.
It's everything that I wanted. And I would say that like it exceeded all expectations.
Yeah.
And part of that is I was fully braced for fandom to be weird because, you know, like because it's Star Wars fandom and there's always a little bit of weird in it. But there was only like one really like, you know, head scratching message that was sent that I've seen but I haven't dove too deep into like any sort of like forum discussions about it. So, but by and large, I got like pretty good feedback on it.
Wait when you get your novel or book, then you'll hear it. I'm sure.
I've talked with some of the more veteran authors who just said like, you know, like 99% of the fans are the greatest because that's what we all love. And then there's just like the 1% that, you know, for whatever reason, like their goal seems to be obsessing, in unhealthy ways.
Well, they're also cowards, and I'm telling you right now, like they'll come at you online, but I'm telling you, they'll be in line at the next convention to get their plate signed or their copy signed. I'm telling you, they won't.
Yeah.
They'll kiss your ass when they're standing in front of you. That's the one thing you can count on. But I don't, you know, this, I think these from a certain point of views get a little bit of slack that way. And much, and I, you know, I don't know if it's just because they're short stories. And I mean, there's only so much you can pick apart in a short story, or in a way they are sort of just like licensed fan fiction in a way. And,
yeah.
And so I think people just sort of give them a bit of a break. In that sense, and also, you know, they're not affecting current canon really in any way, right? So that was
actually why I was worried, was because right. My story directly affects canon in a really big way. And I know I'm one of the few stories in both collections to define a major canon moment, like sure. That's not like like there's a Claudia Gray's in the first one where she defines the moment right before Obi-Wan runs into Luke on Tatooine, and Obi-Wan is talking to Qui-Gon's ghost, and it's like, you know, that's a canon moment now, but yep. That's still like kind of behind the scenes. But sure. This is, if, for those that don't know, this is about how the Emperor discovers the existence of Luke. So it's pretty major.
It takes place right before. So everyone remembers the scene in Empire when, you know, Vader gets summoned to his Emperor, wants to talk to him. And so Vader, there's that famous scene where it's the first time we see the Emperor.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Vader kneels down on his weird ring communication pad. And,
that's how you activate Zoom.
Yeah, it's a touchpad, a sensor yeah. pad, and then and boom, the Emperor, and his first line is fantastic, and it's a great scene. So your short story takes place in your head. Does it take place like literally right before, and he just swivels in his chair and turns on the TV, or
the bulk of it, I'd say like 90% of it takes place probably a few days
yeah,
before okay. that.
Yeah.
And then you have a moment where it's where he actually does, he swivels in his chair and he clicks a button and says, like, summon Lord Vader.
Yeah. He's like, he saw a little sticky pad, a notepad yeah. of things he was supposed to do that day. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's like, I was really, really nervous about it, but it seems to have gotten a universally pretty good. Reception. The worst feedback I got was my friend's Star Wars obsessed 9-year-olds thought it was scary.
So okay.
I'm like, oh, that's well, good.
Yeah.
It's
a, I mean, it kind of was.
Story.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. Well, there you go. So that's success, right? Well, that's good. I'm glad it went well for you. Cause, you know, it was a great short story. And I know these, once this Lucasfilm Publishing, once they get their hooks into you, they like to keep you around. So that bodes well for you.
Fingers crossed, man. I am.
Well, I know you wouldn't be able to tell me if you had some already lined up, but,
I really, really want to do it. We'll just put it that way.
Understood. Well, I'm sure, like I said, once they really love known commodities there, we know that for sure. So if you are telling me the truth and you really don't have anything set up yet, it's only a matter of time.
I'm really telling you the truth. Like they know they like me. That's what my agent tells me.
Right. Okay.
And I've made it known that I would love to do anything. And, but I hear they move fast. So it could be something that just comes out of the blue and then it's like due like 4 or 5 months later.
Oh, it'll be shorter than that probably. I've heard yeah. some like way shorter ones than that too. Especially in a lot of the, I know authors for the Galaxy's Edge books too, they had like no lead time at all. It's quick, man. But well, yeah, hopefully they give you as much time as possible to craft something pretty cool. Maybe phase two for the High Republic. I know you said you haven't read any of that stuff yet.
I have. I'm very excited because their group of authors is amazing. And it's just purely I don't have time because it's a pandemic. And
yeah.
So my brain power is spent trying to work while handling virtual kindergarten. So
right.
I don't have a lot of brain power by the end of the day.
Yeah, no doubt. No, it is really a stellar lineup, and you already mentioned her name, but I think personally, in my opinion, Claudia Gray is the greatest Star Wars writer of all time. So
I 100% subscribe to that. I've yeah. read, actually, shockingly, I have not read Lost Stars,
which is funny. One. Yeah, which is the one. Which yeah. is if yeah, but I mean, she's 5 for 5, but you yeah. can't go wrong. But that's an incredible book. It's which everyone loves, and rightfully so. It's fantastic. But I mean, she's even last year's, well, I guess now it's the year before's Master Apprentice was fantastic. It's just
that's she's up there in my up yeah. like high, because I am a huge Qui-Gon Jinn fan.
Oh, right on.
So that's right. What I was I mean, I loved her Leia work. Bloodline, I loved how Bloodline was like political thriller in Star Wars.
Yep.
But when she announced, because I thought her Qui-Gon story in the first A Certain Point of View is one of my favorite stories of all time.
Right.
It's like, it's everything that I love about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan into one. And so her full novel, I just could not wait for it. I basically read it in two sittings. It was awesome.
That was a great Alphabet Squadron came out, the first one, and then Master and Apprentice, and I was like back to back, and I was like, well, we're in good shape here Star Wars book wise but I really like her Leia Princess of Alderaan novel quite a bit.
Yes,
my
daughter is six and is obsessed with Star Wars, like, which is
great.
It's a good and bad thing, because it's
sure.
Literally every night while I'm drying her off from shower, she asks me just really fucking random Star Wars questions.
Oh my God, that's so great.
At some point, I'm like, I don't know. But then I do know, actually. That's the thing.
Right. But yeah, yeah.
But I told her, like, she sees my book collection and she wants to read the teenage, Leia one. She's like, yeah. Oh, it's when Leia's a teenager. I'm like, yeah, like, when I can't wait for you to read it, but like, you have to learn to read first. But that, like, once she can, when she's probably about 10 or so, I'll pass that one along.
Yeah, no, that's a great one for younger people for sure. And so is Lost Stars, I think, too, right? Especially if they have a general idea of the saga, and Lost Stars would be a great one for a young, just getting going Star Wars reader. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I'm glad the experience was overall pretty good for you. Like I said, I have no doubt we'll see you writing Star Wars again. But mainly, though, you are here because, yes, you've got a new book. You've got a new book coming out. We Could Be Heroes. Right. We Could Be Heroes, it's called. One of the things I really like, too, this is a quote from you. And I wrote it down, but I don't remember where I got it from. But it's just talking about sort of, the type of stories you like to write. And this is, quote, "In my stories, there are no epic wars or fate of the universe events. Instead, they're tales of family and friendship and humor that just happened to have some time travel or an apocalypse." And that's a really great, I wrote that down. I don't think you were talking about We Could Be Heroes, but
no,
it
no,
does.
That was, but that
it,
was actually,
is that, old,
that was old, on my website bio.
Okay. I wrote it down from somewhere.
Like, yeah. 2017-ish or something, but it's basically my brand. Like, those are the types of stories that I like best.
Well, I was just going to say, it could be We Could Be Heroes was my point.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Right. So, just so before we get to specifically We Could Be Heroes. Yeah. So you say that's your brand. Was that like intentional, or that's the stories you like to read? So that's the stories I like to write.
That's basically it. And it's like the stories I like to watch too.
Right.
I always say that a perfect example of this is for people who have watched Star Trek: The Next Generation, one of my favorite episodes of that is Lower Decks, which is kind of the inspiration for the animated series that just came out this
past
year.
Which is great, by the way. Yeah.
Which I actually have not seen.
It's so funny. Yeah, it's really great. Yeah.
But the episode, the Next Generation episode, is about four ensigns who are friends, and like, they're terrified of Riker and they're intimidated by Worf. And, but
yep, as you would be. Yeah.
But we spend all of our weekly adventures with, like, oh, Riker's just, this dork with the trombone and a beard, and to get that slice of life. I love that kind of stuff. When things are not quite as epic, I obviously enjoy epic. Otherwise, I wouldn't be watching so much Star Wars. But I think my favorite moments really are character moments, which is why I love the Clone Wars so much, because the Clone Wars really leans into those character moments across this like massive tapestry of Star Wars.
Again, backtracking a little bit, but that's one of the great things about the From a Certain Point of View books, right? Is it gives us a chance to sort of like, I love like the mechanics, the guts of things, right? So it's like, we get to see how the sausage is made, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean? So that's, I'm with you. I always love those, meeting those people behind the scenes. Cause not everyone's a Jedi. Very few people are Jedi actually comparatively, but, that's all. Yeah, that's really great. And that's one of the things that really comes out, in this book, especially with that quote. So I'm going to read the summary because it's actually nice and short, because sometimes our summaries are way too long. So Jamie woke up in an empty apartment with no memory and only a few clues to his identity, but with the ability to read and erase other people's memories. a power he uses to hold up banks to buy coffee, cat food, and books. All true. Zoe is also searching for her past and using her abilities of speed and strength to deliver fast food, and she'll occasionally put on a cool suit and beat up bad guys if she feels like it. When the arch rivals meet in Memory Loss Support Group, they realize the only way to reveal their hidden past might be through each other. As they uncover an ongoing threat, suddenly much more is at stake than their fragile friendship, sorry. With countless people at risk, Zoe and Jimmy will have to recognize that sometimes being a hero starts with trusting someone else and yourself. So that's the promotional language, right, for We Could Be Heroes. Mm-hmm. And that does a really nice job, I think, of summing it up. Unless I just read it, what's the book about for you? Right? Like, what's the heart of the book as far as you're concerned? Like, if you had to convince me to, I've already read it, but if you had to convince me to read it.
It's about the stakes that we put out there when we're forming friendship with someone, but now then you add in superpowers. So then the stakes get much higher because if someone's going to be more fun. Yeah. if someone has the power to throw you across a building or to erase your mind, then you better trust them. So it's about how two unlikely people can choose to be different from what society prescribes them to be and to build a friendship out of that.
Where did this, where the idea for this story come from?
There was a short story that was published in summer of 2017. There was, when I was on submission for my first book, submission is the process where your agents send manuscripts out to editors and they take a few months to debate whether or not they're going to buy it. Mm-hmm. My first novel, which is Here and Now and Then, was on submission for almost 2 years because between the last 5 years, publishing has really started to embrace like character-driven science fiction and fantasy or literary science fiction and fantasies as we're categorized sometimes. And there's a lot of stories like that now. And I was just on the beginning of the wave of that, but it took a while to get there. And so while we were waiting, during that time, my agent encouraged me to write short stories. And he had sent me a prompt, for this contest, which I didn't write it for the contest because I didn't have time when it was due, but it was a quirky superhero fiction. That was just like the general prompt for the contest. And I had this idea of a superhero and a supervillain who meet up in an AA meeting by accident. And that thought always just stuck with me. And then when my agent said, try writing a short story, get your mind off of it, I wrote a short story called Anonymous. And it's got pretty close to all of chapter 5 of this book. It breaks differently because in this book, or in the short story, it's about Jamie, the mind robber, Zoe, the throwing star, who are both alcoholics, and they accidentally meet up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the idea was, if they're in a safe space where their identities are anonymous, could they have empathy for each other, despite being, you know, technically enemies? So I took that out when I was looking at how do I expand this to a larger novel. So the magazine that published it folded, all the rights reverted back to me. And when I was thinking of ideas for my third book, I was like, I really like them. I know their backstory. I know the world that they're in. Like, I made all these notes for it, and it would be fun to do it. So I just expanded on that. So that chapter 5, the whole scene at the support group is very, very similar to the original short story. And it was basically about like nature versus nurture. The book itself expands much on that, and especially on the themes of friendship. When Jamie and Zoe started to just naturally write each other or write themselves. So like the dialogue just became very organic, and it is clear that I'm like halfway through it. And I'm like, it's clear that like they should be best friends. That's just how they talk to each other. So that's really where the inspiration came from, was just like feeling this natural chemistry between two people and in a very non-romantic way, which I really wanted to emphasize because everything is like, you know, shipping right now, which has its place, but I would really like to see more friendship stories out there.
Sure. And there is a little bit I don't want to get too spoilery with this discussion, but just a little warning, we are going to do a little bit of spoilers, but not many, but you do sort of hint at Jamie's past where it kind of might not work with Jamie and Zoe anyways. But
actually, so there's, I know it could read that way, but like I tried to write it. There's a moment explicitly where Jamie does actually find her physically attractive. So Jamie, I wrote him as a pansexual.
Okay.
So I wanted that, like, the opportunity is there. They both have this internal moment where they both feel like, you know, individually, like, I actually like this, just being friends. And I think that should be celebrated more in our society. Like,
oh yeah, for sure. Yep.
We're like, you know, because I have a lot of female friends and I've never considered dating any of them. You know, we're just friends. It's great. And I think the more that we normalize that, like the better, you know, our world could be.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of us, I'm 44 years old. I don't know how old you are, but you know, we were raised in the When Harry Met Sally world, right?
Where yeah, said, I'm 42. So
okay,
yeah,
so
yeah,
they said, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that. And I agree 100%. So like the summary says, and you sort of touched on a little bit, it seems exceptionally cruel to me to give these two these specific powers, especially, you know, you've got, you know, a lot of the bulk of the story is them, like the thing says, trying to sort of piece together their past. And, you know, I won't say sort of why they need to do that necessarily, but so you've got two people trying to piece together their past and fill in a lot of blanks. And one of them, his ability is to read people's memories. And the other one, you super strength. Both are useless, more or less, in their endeavor to sort of piece together this past. Like, it's not something that necessarily, you know, they can use to just sit there and
right.
and figure this out. So you've given her all the strength in the world, but ultimately it's not, doesn't do a lot of good with what she needs to do in the immediate future. And Jamie can read everyone's memories but his own.
So right, exactly.
It's kind of cruel.
It's very much one of I mean, I love so many elements of X-Men, but I loved how you know, like Rogue, how she can, like, you know, absorb other people, but she can't physically touch them.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
That's sort of like,
it's the cruel irony of it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And you can do so much with that with superpowers. So that's really where this came from. I also wanted to do, like, I knew that this would be going out to people who don't typically read comic books, you know, a lot of it.
Right.
And so I went with archetypes of, like, one physical strength and one mental strength. And I kind of played it from there.
Yeah. Which makes perfect sense, especially when they get going and, you know, the sort of second act of this book is sort of like the investigation part, I guess. Yeah. Right. And that's really when, you know, it takes a bit, but they got to learn how to use the skills they have been given in the appropriate manner, especially, Zoe, who's, you know,
she's a little chaotic.
She likes to rush right in. Right. Yeah. So, you know, once she learns to control that a little bit, then she's, you know, then she really becomes unstoppable in a way, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of humor in this book, which I liked. And it says in the thing too, right? Like he's got this great, this awesome superpower. And yeah, he uses it to like, you know, hold up banks, which is fine. And, you know, read a lot of books and stuff and drink. And all his dream is to retire on a warm, you know, on a beach and drink coffee with his cat, you know, when he could have almost anything he wants. And Zoe, yeah, is just, it's always a little different. I mean, she doesn't really have a plan, does she?
Yeah, actually, I was just for a different interview, I was asked to, like, define them in a few words, and I said Jamie is fearful and untrusting, and Zoe is impulsive and untrusting.
Fearless and untrusting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, and that's why I think they make really good friends, because, like, to discover that trust, they have to balance each other out,
right?
Because Zoe's a disaster.
Yeah.
But she's got a good heart, and Jamie has a good heart too. He's trying to calculate ways to just, like, use his abilities without hurting anyone. Because really, he just wants to hang out with his cat and read. So, like, you know, what kind of bad person would that be?
Right. Yeah. It's he's almost like not lost hope, sort of, but it's, I think Jamie comes along, or Zoe comes along at the right time. One of the things too, again, what was funny, like, you know, Zoe's taken on the moniker Throwing Star, and there's a sort of a funny bit about that and why she keeps, and you know, what she wants to call it and stuff like that, which is pretty funny. But one of the things too I want to talk about this book was the antagonists. Sort of, I always love, you know, anti-heroes, right? So, you know, like villains, but I won't say villains with a heart of gold, but
villains with a purpose.
It's complicated. Their, you know, their status is complicated, right? And I really don't want to reveal anything about these villains necessarily. I mean, we can say that there's this big thing called Project Electron.
Yeah, there's a third party involved.
Yeah, and you know, there's this this power couple, no pun intended there. No one will know what I'm talking about if they haven't read the book. But Sasha and Waris Kaftan are, you know, there's this power couple, and you know, they have motivations and reasons for the doing the things they do. I think my question to you is, you know, where's the balance with you, not only maybe with this story, because that would, that might reveal spoilers, but just with making antagonists too likable? Because, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that, you know, for me anyways, by the end of the book, and you're kind of just like, you know, they're not so bad.
I think it's important. Yeah. I think, like, so my goal with this was to basically write a comic book in prose, but take a lot of tropes and twist them on their side.
Sure.
So, and I knew I was going to start off with a hero and villain becoming friends. So if that's the case, then there has to be a third antagonist. I had dared to venture into Goodreads for early reviews. Uh-oh. And I saw one person who said that they were disappointed from the second half because it actually focuses on, you know, this third party and how it's all connected. And that person said, like, they just wanted Jamie and Zoe to just hang out and do stuff together.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
Yeah. And I totally get that, but that would never sell as a book. And because that's, I actually had to cut a lot of dialogue because they just, like I said earlier, they just naturally wrote their dialogue. It just came flowing out.
Sure.
So it was just like banter between them, but it didn't move the story forward. But I think it's the best villains. Like, my favorite villain is probably Magneto. Because you totally get what he's going for. And, yep, you know, there's like maybe a third of the stories he gets twisted into a reluctant hero. We're rewatching Star Trek Deep Space Nine right now. This is the first time I've watched it in maybe 20 years. And I've forgotten how complex Gul Dukat is.
Right.
So it's like, I think, and, you know, I'm a huge fan of Anakin Skywalker. And I know that, like, for people who have not seen the Clone Wars, they might be like, he's got a really thin character. And it's like, no, he's got an incredibly rich character, and he's conflicted. He wants to do good. He's pulled in all sorts of terrible directions. And so it's like Vader is so complex, and especially with the recent comic series by Greg Pak, that really infuses all this together. So I like villains that are, the best villains, I think, are always morally complex, where you can understand their motivation and you kind of want them to win. The only villain that I really adore that is not like that is the Joker, but I'm mainly thinking of the Mark Hamill Joker who I grew up with, who's just brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot. There's not a soft and chewy center on that Joker.
No.
or a culpable past, even, right? So,
yeah.
But I guess, you know, what sort of, you know, it's funny though, because there is inadvertently, you know, sort of there is a love story element to this, and it does sort of come from the antagonist side a little bit. Mm-hmm. It actually added up to a couple of really beautiful moments in this book. And, you know, there's the one at near the end, which I really don't want to talk about too much, but I think you probably know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was sort of that scene. I thought it could have been a little longer. I felt like I wanted a bit more when it was over, but then when I finished reading the book completely, I look back and I'm like, well, yeah, that makes sense. It's not their story, yeah, number one. Right. So yeah. So you the practical side of my brain kicks in after I've done reading the book, but in the moment, you get caught up in the moment, right?
And there's several moments involving the antagonist where, like, I wrestled with, like, do I give them longer, because these are very strong emotional beats. Mm-hmm. And the logic that like I ultimately came back to was like, we're not in their head. Right. You know, we are in either Jamie's head or right. Zoe's head.
Right.
So it's going to be, in some ways it's breaking, you know, it's breaking point of view. If, you know, all of this just like, you know, if we get these massive moments with these secondary characters, while the main characters are just like sitting back and, you know, waiting for things to happen while their friend is in distress. So like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And those were conscious choices.
Yeah. It's well done though. Beautiful. Really, really, really nice touching moment, you know, really great scene. You did a real nice soft touch there for sure, Mike. So yes, this book is like, it's sort of like, you know, it feels like it takes place, well, for sure it takes place just in one city, but it, you know, it doesn't, you don't cover a lot of geography with it, but you do hint at a bigger world, a bigger story that's happening. And I don't, is this book isn't a series, is it? I don't think it is.
Not right now. It's okay. Sold as a standalone. When we were, the way that I typically write, I first write dialogue. So my early drafts are a lot of like stage direction and dialogue. And then I go back and then I start to build out the prose as I start to understand the characters. And I call myself a reluctant world builder because like, I know I have to do it, but I really, really hate doing it. Like I have friends who like will make like binders and spreadsheets and like basically write an RPG manual so they can write their fantasy novel. And I am like the complete opposite where I'm like, what is the bare minimum to make the story make sense?
Right.
And about halfway through this, like I had started to hint at other stuff because it made sense in the continuity of this world. And my editor was like, you know, let's lean into that. Let's make it seem much bigger because it should be. And then with the idea that like, you know, if people really like this book, like there's plenty of stories in there to go with. So it's definitely a possibility. I think we probably have to see, you know, the reception to it, but
of course,
I have four or five different like ways to move the story forward with these characters who I clearly adore. You know, they're a lot of fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
So it's a, it was very intentional to make it feel bigger and to drop hints about things elsewhere. There's also, there's a few cameos from my friends who have written books about powered people before. So my friend Kat Howard, who's her book, An Unkindness of Magicians, is one of my favorite books of all time. And so like her magicians get a shout out. And then Fonda Lee's, her Greenbone saga with Jade City and Jade War, which is going to be a TV show on Peacock. So her characters get a little shout out too. And I've had a few book reviewers like tweet at me like, is this Fonda's characters? And like, yeah.
Well, I, like I said, you definitely, you know, I don't want to get specific with it, but you do, you know, hint at a bigger, larger world. And I would say the ending works both in both ways. I think you could, if you had to walk away, I think you, the reader, you'll be satisfied, but also it definitely, there's a lot of opportunity there to tell more story. And it sounds like you've got more than a few ideas. So, I definitely, let's encourage people to buy that book. So yeah. We could be
very much, George Lucas with the original Star Wars.
Like, yeah. Right. End,
but Vader's flying off somewhere. So
I never thought I'd have to make more of these. Yeah. So, We Could Be Heroes comes out January 29th.
26.
Sorry. Why do I have the 29th written down? Around here, we try not to give any more money to that pandemic profiteering bald guy. Mm-hmm. So yes. Do you have a preferred method of purchase?
Your local bookstore should have it.
Yep.
I know like it's HarperCollins, it's a hardcover, so it's got pretty good distribution.
Yep.
All the ebook providers have it, even like it's got, my editor told me that the early library purchases are really good. So good. Check with your library too.
Yep.
It's also got audiobook. So the voice of Dr. Aphra herself, Emily Wu Zeller.
Right on. Oh man, yeah. I am not a huge audiobook guy, but that I'm all for these, and especially with Cavan's book, he did the drama, right? The
Count Dooku.
Count Dooku I'm drama. Reading that right now, Jedi Lost. Yeah. I'm all for these dramas that they've been putting out, audio dramas. So and Aphra was particularly sweet.
I told Emily please give Zoe the same sort of like chaotic voice that Dr. Aphra has. Because as soon as I heard her as Aphra, I'm like, oh, this will be perfect.
Well, I'm going to listen to that then for sure, because she is very, very talented. I'm sure people know this by now, but if they don't, folks, pre-orders are really important in publishing and for the authors. So please, if you're going to buy a book, don't wait. And if this does turn into a series, you don't want to be that guy that has to go back and buy book one because you heard about book two, right?
Yeah.
So don't be that guy. MikeChenBooks.com is where they can see everything else you got going on. Is there anything coming out that you are allowed to talk about?
So I've just turned in the full manuscript for my fourth book, which should be about a year from now, which is called Second Contact. And it's an X-Files-esque family drama about a trio of siblings who one of the siblings was abducted by aliens, they think. And then he comes back 15 years later and he claims to be fighting an intergalactic war. But their family unit has completely fractured from his disappearance. And so it's another family drama set against a bigger landscape. And it's I tell people it's kind of like if there was an entire X-Files episode about the family involved in the investigation and not Mulder and Scully.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. I was going to say it's like X-Files meets Flight of the Navigator or something, except that I think the family stayed together in that movie. So I wouldn't apply.
we use the pitch of the X-Files meets the Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Bly Manor, too. Like the way that like the intergenerational sort of conflict at where something fantastical happens and it creates this trauma.
Okay.
And then a teeny tiny bit of The Last Starfighter.
Well, you just sold me on it anyways. all right. January 26th, We Could Be Heroes. Mike, I can't thank you enough for coming by. I really appreciate it. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Mike Chen for stopping by to discuss his latest book and all the rest. We Could Be Heroes is out tomorrow, and I encourage you to pick it up. Like I said, it's a fun sci-fi mystery with a pair of great lead characters and a ton of heart. Head on over to MikeChenBooks.com to see what else Mike has going on. Also, just a reminder, Black History Month starts next week, so be sure to support Black authors all month long and all year long by not only buying and reading books from Black authors, but supporting them on social media, boosting their work. It's a huge help. However you can do it is great. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.